What's up, Dialed fam? Happy Wednesday and welcome to the Strength Training for Cyclists podcast by Dialed Health. My name is Derek Teal. I'm the owner and operator of Dialed Health. And let me tell you, my confidence for this episode is through the roof. I am so juiced about the content I have coming for you guys today. And partially it's because of a really cool DM I got, which we'll go over in a second. It just got me fired up. But we have such a wide variety of things we're talking about. And one of them is the Dialed Health Shred. Now, yesterday was the final day for the official Dialed Health Shred, at least if you're involved in the competition. And I'm not gonna go over details of like how to submit the before and after photos and the process question and all that. What we're gonna talk about is if you want to continue your shred process, just some tips to help support you, or if you want to maintain where you're at and how to really maintain without putting the weight back on, because it's going to take real effort and focus. And I want to give you a few strategies. So after that, we're going to go into a quick motivational rant about the difference between optimal performance and peak performance. Now, I learned this on another podcast last week, and I'm just kind of obsessed with the idea, and it's very in line with the mythology behind Dialed Health. So I wanted to bring that up to you guys, and I thought you'd find it really interesting and motivating. After that, we have a question about eccentric versus plyometric training. Then training time and guilt with your family, very, very real. I've experienced that firsthand, no doubt. And then we talk about food periodization, which is a concept that's more regular, or I guess just more talked about in weightlifting culture, if you're just really trying to put on muscle. But I wanna kind of give you an example of how we could use that concept to really benefit what we're doing as cyclists and kind of what the differences are and the things to watch out for. So I love this episode already. Let's dive into this really cool DM I got. This is from Kate Weatherly, MTB on Instagram. She's a World Cup downhill racer, and I followed her because I just follow the World Cup downhill circuit so closely. And when I got this DM from her and knew that she was listening, it was just super cool because to be honest, like, you don't need to be somebody in cycling for me to be happy about you consuming my content. That couldn't be further from the truth. But I got to tell you, as someone who has been in the industry for a long time, to just have the attention of people who are at the top of the sport is just like kind of, it's kind of surreal for me. And it's just so cool. And it makes me really feel like Dialed Health is having a genuine impact and is being seen as a real part of the industry, which is, I mean, that is the number one goal right there. In fact, I get a very similar feeling when I have other professionals in fitness reach out to me, you know, chiropractors, physical therapists, people with real educations that say that they love my movements or my style of training or yada yada. And it's not that it means more because they're quote unquote professionals in the industry. It's just because it's like, wow, there's like a credibility behind it where, you know, I feel like I'm in here sometimes just dancing around with my shirt off. So it really does just make me feel like Dialed Health is becoming even more real, which is crazy. So what Kate said was, she said, "Hey Derek, I'm not sure if you've heard of me. I don't know how closely you follow the Women's World Cup downhill the last few years. I just mentioned I follow it very closely. But regardless, I wanted to express my appreciation and dedication for what you do. I love everything training, and your commitment to your podcast and the athletes you work with is really clear. And I wanted to say, keep up the good work. Even at the level I ride at, it's always interesting to learn, and I enjoy the way you do things. So thank you." Kate, thank you. I hope you listen to this. I think it's awesome that you feel that way and that you could see really how much I care about the people behind the Dialed fam, because I do, man. It's insane. I'm going to actually talk about this on Instagram soon, but the community that we have is just cool. I mean, there are so many cool people and just good people in our community, and I just can't wait for us to be more easily connected, because I talk with people all day long where I have that moment from Step Brothers where I'm like, did we just become best friends? Yep. And then just, you know, do the big high five, start doing karate. That's how I feel all the time talking to people in, you know, DMs or through email or something. And I'm like, wow, this person is awesome. I almost get bummed when I don't feel like I can get to know them more, because obviously I just have to help a lot of people. So yeah, it's the plus and minus of what I do, but regardless, I really appreciate you, Kate, just acknowledging the work that goes into this. And thank you to everybody that is supporting and listening. So let's dive into the actual episode. The 2021 Dialed Health Shred is officially over. Round of applause for everybody that participated. Come on now, give yourself a little pat on the back. I am so pumped to be seeing the results coming in already. I've gotten a few emails, the before and after photos, what people have honestly accomplished in 1 month is insane. And I'm not surprised about it. I just get so excited because when someone really commits to the process, it's very rare they don't get some insane form of results. What I've seen already are some people with specific pounds lost, others with a real change in body composition. You know, it tends to be like the leaner you are at the start, the more your body composition is going to change versus, you know, if you have more weight to lose in the beginning, it tends to be more body fat. And the difference is, you know, body fat is like just body fat lost. It's a general weight lost, whereas body composition means you're probably building muscle and losing fat in a way that your weight doesn't change a lot, but you're shrinking, you're getting so much smaller. And I've said it before, but 1 pound of muscle only takes up 18% of the room a pound of fat makes up. So you could have someone that's super muscle bound and lean be the same way to someone that actually has a lot of body fat with not a lot of muscle because of that reason. So we're seeing results on both ends, and I just can't wait to be getting them in over the week. We're gonna be making the decision on Monday. That is February 8th, I believe. Yeah, February 8th. Do I need to check that? I think that's the date. So I can't wait to decide. It's gonna be super cool to give away the prizes. And what I wanna go over now is not the specifics on how to submit everything that is on the latest blog post. Dialed Fam members should have gotten an email about the link to that and with a little baby family update. But I want to give people some ideas on how to continue the process, because we all know, you know, 30 days is not going to be enough for a lot of people to reach their quote unquote end goal. And also, if you are at that end goal, though, and I want to give you strategies on how to maintain and not gain the weight back, because it is a slippery slope. I totally get that. And I want to make sure you have some boundaries in place to really support you and just keep this new, I guess, body composition that you have. So first things first, if you are choosing to continue, you want to solidify your end goal and how you will get there. So you really want to be clear on a stopping point to keep the process tangible, because although we know this is like a forever process, we're always growing, we're always trying to be better. You know, if you don't have a specific weight or a body fat percentage or even like a watt per kilo or a performance goal that you want to reach that is, I guess, within reach, it's going to feel so impossible. You're going to feel so far away from it constantly. And if you do have a goal that's very far set out, you have to break it down into chunks. You have to have checkpoints on the way to get there so that you can celebrate those little victories and stay motivated. Because when it does feel that big, it's just like not tangible. It's out of reach almost. So I would say be very, very clear on those stopping points of what the actual end goal is. Sorry, I was just burping up my lunch there. Spicy chicken sandwich from Chick-fil-A. Heads up, if you haven't gotten that, get the grilled one, okay? Take the cheese off. It's only 360 calories, packed with protein, freaking makes your face sweat. I was sweating from my scalp eating that thing. It is delicious. Anyways, back to this. Little tangent on my Chick-fil-A obsession right there. So, by the way, Chick-fil-A, where is Chick-fil-A? Is it only a West Coast thing? Is it all over the country? I don't think it's worldwide. If you guys are not in America and you ever come to America, Chick-fil-A is the ultimate fast food restaurant. It's the best, but they're not open Sundays. So, you know, watch yourself on that. I've been disappointed many of Sundays going and excited for my Chick-fil-A, but more power to them. It's the Lord's Day. So, okay. Now, if you are, that was such a big tangent. I'm so sorry about that. Okay, once you solidify your goals, you have tangible ideas of when you're going to stop and when you're going to hit those markers. You want to recommit to food tracking and the exercise program you've done so far, or tweak it based on what you've learned. The most important thing is that you set these boundaries in stone. You don't want to just say, I'm going to get there and I don't really have the roadmap, you know? So it's you sticking with probably what you got, probably what you used to get to the point you're at now, which has been the food tracking. Reward yourself. As cliche as it sounds, the real prize is your new body and the habits you've built to achieve it. That is the realest thing ever. Very cliche, but very real. However, you want to celebrate your accomplishments, because it's not an easy task to be losing body fat and changing your lifestyle. There is so much fighting against you. That's also very real. Now, what I would recommend for rewarding yourself, it could be anything. It could be a specific meal. You know, with food tracking, you're going to get to a point where you've probably been craving something. And I'm not saying to go and just absolutely have this crazy blowout, make yourself sick meal, but go and enjoy some, you know, a very butter basted steak, some mashed potatoes, a piece of pie, you know, like a macaroni and cheese. I don't know, fried chicken. And I would say just don't try and eat too much. Be mindful in a sense. I don't want you to go into it and just absolutely blow out a week's worth of progress, but enjoy it, you know, and that's like a great way to celebrate it. And not only that, but I'll tell you, if you do get a little sick from it, it'll probably re-motivate you to just nail the diet for the next few days. So go to a specific meal that you've been craving. You could buy a new bike part if it's within your budget, or just plan a specific ride trip. You just want that extra motivation to reach your goal and help you reflect on the journey when you get there. Because it's not just about you having the reward of like, oh, this tastes so good, or oh, I've been wanting to get that bike part or go to this trip. It's you doing, like, getting that or using it or just stopping and enjoying that moment to be like, wow, like, the reason I have this right now is because of all this hard work and this change that I've made. And that's the real thing too. It's like, you really want to stop and reflect on the journey. And those are natural markers to do it. So you have solidified goals, you have checkpoints, you have a reward system in place. And all of those things are kind of like triggers for you to really just stop and enjoy the journey and just be proud of yourself and re-motivate yourself to keep going. Okay, so that is how to continue. Those are kind of my goals there. You're basically just keep on keeping on with the dialed health shred. Just make sure you have a very clear idea of the stopping points or the checkpoints where you're going to reward yourself. Now, how to maintain. Let's just say you got to your goal of where you're at, or maybe you know you're not at your long-term goal, but you want a little bit of a break. You want to get back to maintenance. You want to go a few weeks without food tracking, a few months. I totally understand that. Now, my biggest tip for you would be to weigh yourself every single day. There's a lot of people out there that say the scale is a liar and I don't need that number, yada, yada, yada. Okay, I'm gonna be real with you. It's a very good representation of your lifestyle, plain and simple. If you start blowing it with your diet, you're gonna probably start putting on weight. You know, if you're a hard gainer and you have a hard time gaining muscle and all that, and you can afford to do it, it's also a tool for you guys, because you don't want to lose weight. So it's like, no matter which side you're on, the scale is going to give you the real idea of where you're going if you follow the trend. Yes, there's going to be a day where you wake up 3 pounds heavier, 4 pounds heavier, or lighter randomly. I mean, that stuff does happen. Most of it is water retention. There could be, you know, all the stress based on your body, extra blood plasma, your body retaining water in your muscles because they're so broken down. There's all these reasons why, you had that butter-based steak. It was very salty. You woke up a little puffy. So those things are real to consider on the day-to-day track, you know, weight, but it's the overall trend. You know, this Monday I'm this, next Monday I'm that. That is going to be the real thing. Like, look at the graph and it will keep you clear on, hey, you know what? I let things get a little out of hand the last 2 days. My portion size was a little big. I had dessert. I had an extra couple drinks. And you know what? The scale's reflecting it. I'm putting on weight. These next couple days, I'm going to retrack and keep it in check, course correct a little bit. That's all you're using the scale for. It is literally course correction. Now, from there, I would say continue your workouts, continue your water intake and your tracking if you're open to continuing tracking. Now, the reason you would want to continue that is because you want the variables to be the same and you want to bring up your calories and get used to eating at maintenance level. So what I wrote here is the goal is to slowly relax around food tracking, opposed to just stopping right away. It is kind of the ideal way to do it. But first, you want to get used to eating at maintenance. Keeping other variables like your workouts and water intake the same will help add clarity to this change. For most, eating at maintenance will mean adding 500 calories to your current day. And most of those calories are probably going to come from carbs and fat if you've been hitting your protein goal. If you would like a refresher to feel confident in this change, refer back to the Nutrition Guidelines blog that is on the website. And that'll just basically tell you how to find your BMR, your active basal metabolic rate, and then, you know, the calories you want to add or subtract to be in a deficit, maintain, or be in a surplus. So those are really the steps I would take in maintenance. It would be ideally, if, you know, perfect world, you continue to weigh every single day to course correct. And then all you would do is still track, but up your calories by 500 in your carbs and your fats. Now, once you eat at maintenance for a little bit, you'll probably get used to how it feels. You'd be like, okay, cool, I added avocado, I added a serving of nuts, I added a chocolate chip cookie, I added whatever each day. And once you feel kind of like you have a good rhythm down and those habits down, that's when you can really back off tracking and probably maintain it. Still checking in on your weight, but that's gonna be the most successful way to do it, in my opinion. Last week, I was listening to the School of Greatness podcast by Lewis Howes. It's a very motivational, general life self-development podcast that if you haven't checked out, I highly recommend it. It's helped me a ton just growing my business, career, and just building better habits for myself generally. I've read Lewis Howes' book, The School of Greatness, and applied just a lot of his teachings. So couldn't recommend that enough. But this specific episode was with former Navy SEAL Rich DeVinny. And when he was on, I didn't really know what he would get into in regards to performance, but his big thing was peak performance versus optimal performance. And it was intriguing because I had never thought about those two being separate. I've heard the term separately, you know, peak performance, optimal performance, we've all heard it. But to really go in and dissect why they are different was something I'd never done. And the big point that he hit was that you can only be at peak fitness for so long, because if you think about it, you're on the peak. You know, you're working your way up to the peak, and then once you're there and you start moving again, you're coming off of the peak and you're going back down. Now, that is super important, especially in the cycling world, because you have to peak for events and be at your best at specific times. And that's what the word peak means. It is like you being at your best, but you're so much at your best that you can't maintain it, essentially. And the higher level you are in sport, the more important that is. If you are a professional athlete, this is your job, that is a very obvious, clear way to train. But if it's not your job, and the majority of people, and his big push is optimal performance. Now, don't get it twisted. I know the value of peak performance, but I gotta say, a lot of us should kind of push towards optimal performance. And this is the majority that are not, you know, riding for a living or making money and supporting their whole life and family off of their performance. So optimal performance is finding your best that you can sustain indefinitely. And when he said that, I was like, oh my gosh, this is exactly what I preach with Dialed Health. It is the general framework of whatever your training week is, and nailing it consistently without worrying about the details until you can find that consistency. Now, the programs I have set in place, there are specifics and periodized workouts and things based off of science. It's very real, and that structure is helpful, but the most important thing is that you nail it. In fact, on my Instagram story I posted today, I talked about not looking at specific moves, but looking at not looking at workouts as specific moves, but looking at them as specific movements. So for instance, my example was a dumbbell chest press. And instead of looking at it like this is a dumbbell bench press, you would look at it as this is a horizontal pushing motion. And what can I do that's also a horizontal pushing motion? Oh, a push-up. Oh, a barbell bench press. Oh, a med ball chest pass. There's a lot of options. And of course, they have a different stimulus, but it's a really good way to not only add variety to keep your programming fun, you still accomplish the goal, which is that motion. And you also will probably have more general consistency, because now you're not bound to that one single workout. You can kind of adapt with it. So focus on, you know, actual movements, not just moves. You know, when you see a squat or a deadlift, that's a hip dominant movement. What else can you do that's hip dominant? Same with a lunge, that is a knee dominant movement. What else can you do that's knee dominant? Oh, you could do a step up, you could do a lateral lunge, you could do all sorts of stuff. So that's kind of the general concept there. And so it's those details that don't matter as much until you're super consistent. Now, don't get me wrong. Periodization, certain training stimuluses, the difference between a barbell bench press and a push-up is significant. But in my opinion, if you are focused on optimal performance, which means long-term, consistent, at your best lifestyle, those details don't matter until you're consistent, plain and simple. So now we need to define what it means to be consistent. So for Dialed Health and all the strength training that I provide, we have two basic parameters that really build those boundaries for us. The first one is supercompensation, which is really the science behind you making progress with your strength training. If you're not doing at least twice a week, you can almost count on the fact that you're not going to get much better. One day a week is going to be maintenance, and then even at that point you're pushing it and you could be going downhill quick. It's a slippery slope, people. So make sure you hit your 2 strength sessions per week. If you want to see the graph on that, go to Google, type in super compensation curve, and you'll see what I'm talking about. It's really simple, interesting, and it will motivate you to make sure you hit your strength sessions and space them out throughout the week. The other one is the 7 effective movements. This is something I learned from Equinox Gyms, and they just have such incredible support for their trainers. And this was such a tangible way for me to think, oh my gosh, this is what balanced programming looks like. You have a knee dominant movement, a hip dominant movement, a core movement, horizontal push and pull with your upper body, and then vertical push and pull with your upper body. As long as you are hitting each of those movements at least once per week, you know you have a balanced program. And for a lot of riders, I do like a 2-to-1 ratio of pulling versus pushing, because we already are pushing so much and a lot of our posture sucks, and a lot of adding the extra pulling motion is really beneficial for a lot of riders, you know. And that's just one general idea, you know. And some people can't actually do a hanging, you know, like a pull-up, which is a vertical pull. And if you can't do it, there's options for you to either put more emphasis on other movements or get as close as you can to that motion without aggravating any existing injuries that you have. I've dealt with people like that. It doesn't mean that you're less than, it just means that you have to modify. That's totally okay. So those are your 2 boundaries. And then with riding, just general fitness, you need to be working out 4 days a week. If you want your body to represent someone who is athletic and trains, you need to be training more days than not, plain and simple. And so 4 days is the absolute minimum, which would mean 2 days of strength, 2 days of riding. And this would be in the general cardio category. But, you know, a lot of advanced riders put in some high volume weeks. I mean, I talk to people who do 6 days on the bike and work in strength training. If you start talking to Ironman triathletes, holy smokes. Or, I mean, talk about volume and trying to figure out your double days and all that. And don't feel pressure to do that if you're not currently. But just so you know, 4 days of general workouts split between cardio and strength training is the minimum. From there, you're kind of just building up. Just make sure you try and give yourself a solid day of recovery. There's very few people, I think, that can pull off very long-term optimal performance like we're going for without a full day of recovery. You know, a day that's just spent on mobility, just spent on foam rolling, or some form of recovery. So did I say recovery enough? I think you get the picture. And that's kind of our framework. So think optimal performance, long-term, hit the consistency in your boundaries, and then move closer and closer to the specifics. If you are a paid athlete, professional level, that's when you are going to be more open to the peak performance, because you can actually, you know, build your whole lifestyle around achieving that. Our first question is from @RicardoRider1. It's actually @R.Rider1. This is a Dialed Health OG. Shout out to you, Ricardo, coming from Italy. And he commented on a recent Instagram post about the differences between eccentric workouts versus plyometric workouts, or he wanted me to dive into it a little bit. And this was off a post that I did where I did a drop and like bottomed out my fork, and basically it was just a hard impact on my upper body. And then I compared it to a push-up variation to help support that movement or build strength for those heavy impacts. And these could be heavy impacts that you take, you know, hitting a pothole on the road bike, really any style of bike where you're taking a lot of load through the bars. And what I did was a slow lower push-up. So this is an eccentric push-up where you lower down, usually at tempo. So mine was a 3 count. So from the top position, I went 3, 2, 1 to the bottom. And then I did a rapid, as fast as I could, explosive push-up back to the top. And then I repeated those reps. Now, what's interesting about that is it's almost blurring the line between plyometric and eccentric, because the way down is the eccentric portion of the motion. So I should probably explain what that means. Let's dive into that first. Now, when your muscles contract, they have 3 different, I guess, ways that they can contract under load. So you have eccentric, which means lengthening under load. That would be like if we just used a bicep curl, for example. I think it's probably the easiest one to compare because it's such an obvious movement. There's not much going on besides your elbow bending. So if you're holding the weight up top, you would be lowering the weight down and you would see that your muscle is lengthening under the load. That's the eccentric portion of the movement. Then the concentric motion would be you curling it back up to the top. So you are contracting your muscle fibers and your muscle fibers are shortening under that load. And then the other option you have is isometric, which means you are not lengthening, you are not contracting. You are just holding the position and your muscles are under load and they're not doing either of those things. So you have eccentric, you have concentric, and you have can I make that more confusing? You have eccentric, concentric, and isometric. Okay. So those are the three ways that your muscle can withstand load, all right? Now, the thing about eccentric motions is that they typically break down your muscle tissue more, and you can tend to get a lot more sore from eccentric motions. In fact, a lot of times when people are trying to build leg strength and they don't want to be sore, they'll stick to very strictly concentric motions. So this could be a sled push where you are just pushing and there's no point where you have to control the weight and go through the lowering phase, like on a squat, which is the eccentric phase, and kind of lengthen the tissue. It's all about the contractions, right? Plyometric movements are all about contracting as fast as possible and being as explosive as possible. It doesn't matter on the weight. I mean, typically they're done body weight, you know, a box jump or a broad jump or some form of a lunge jump or skater jump. A lot of lower body jumping exercises are great forms of plyometrics, including push-ups. You can do a plyo push-up where you actually get your hands off of the ground. And as I record this, I had one question. I'm like, okay, fast movement is really just power in general, and does plyometric mean that it has impact involved? And I'm still not 100% sure, but to my understanding, when you have impact involved, that's when it becomes plyometric. And then when you are just focused on power, that is when it is not plyometric and it's actually just power. So for instance, you lowering yourself controlled way on a push-up and then exploding to the top as fast as you can without coming off the ground is more of a quote unquote power push-up than a plyo push-up, which would be you actually getting your hands off of the ground. And more or less, you could do the same thing with like a kettlebell swing. A kettlebell swing is just another good example where you're doing a power movement. You can go heavy, a short amount of reps, super explosive, but there's no impact and you actually never come off the ground. I mean, the kettlebell's moving, but it's never technically plyometric. So I thought that was kind of an interesting, I'm not trying to confuse us or get off topic, but plyometrics, to my understanding, are when you come off the ground and there's impact involved. It's typically done with extremely lightweight or just body weight. So that's the difference between plyometrics and eccentrics and different concentric contractions. Now, the push-up that I did was that slow lower, eccentric, 3 count, so usually at tempo. You can add a pause to the bottom and then explosive at the top. So basically it was 3 count down, 0 count at the bottom because there was no hold, and then a 1 count on the way up as fast as I could. That was my form of eccentric training, but it's got some power included, but it's not plyometric because I didn't actually come off of the ground. Now, the different, like why you would use one versus the other, really I think it comes down to a few things. Now, plyo is really fun, but there's also that impact involved, which means that it can be a little bit more dangerous. And if you do have joint issues, that could be maybe not the best option. If you want to still work that power stimulus, but you want to really look out for your joints, or you have some precautions that you need to be, considerate of, focus on power where you're not actually taking in the impact. Because there's a bunch of options that you can do, including just coming up fast from a squat and not jumping. Or, you know, you might have to load up a little bit more, which slightly changes the stimulus. But it's another cool option for you. So for all those people out there who like want to do plyo pushups, but you can't, just do a power pushup and don't actually come off of the ground. It's still an option for you. Maybe put a weight vest on if you need some more load. The next question is a fun short one from @the_real_BenBen. He says, "Hey Derek, as a master of body English, Would you say that doing whips and tabletops requires a good amount of hip flexibility and movement? So first off, thank you for that. But I think this came up on my Instagram story or through DM, because on my Instagram story, I posted a video of myself doing a tabletop, which I'll be honest, I was really proud of that. It was like a week ago. And I haven't gone for a proper tabletop in forever. I've been doing a lot of like boosts and tucks and whips and some wannabe scrubs, but I haven't done a proper table in a while. And when I looked back at the video and kind of slow scrubbed it, I was like, oh, that sucker's flat. It felt good, clipped in also. And I think what's interesting is when he brought it up, I looked back at it. And the truth is, you don't have to have an insane amount of hip mobility. Not really. You have to obviously be able to tuck and crunch your body in a certain position on a tabletop, but it doesn't require you to do anything insane mobility wise because you still have this bike that you're moving around. And although you have to, you know, you have to have some internal rotation of your hips. I guess it depends which side you're tabletopping to, but it's really more about tucking your feet back and kind of twisting your upper body. So no, not really an insane amount of mobility required. In fact, I know some super tight bike riders that can do insane stuff on their bike. They're super fluid. They have insane style, but they're just tight, especially through the hips. And if you're doing big whips, you don't really need, if you're doing whips, you don't really need the hips because your legs could be very straight on a whip. You're kind of just pushing the back end out, pulling it back. And if you do bend your legs, you're probably not doing anything more than you would just sitting in a chair movement wise. Or like if you were sitting in a chair and like leaning forward, that's about as crazy as it gets really. And so yeah, I don't know. I threw that in there because I thought you might be surprised by the answer. I don't think you need insane mobility to be able to do that. So if you struggle with mobility, it's no longer an excuse for you. Congratulations. This next question is from @Sambo751. He says, so I'm training most nights either on the turbo or weights, and I ride once a week, twice in summer after work, usually on the weekend, but I get a horrible feeling of guilt when I'm training or riding, like I'm abandoning my family and being selfish. Man, this is such a real feeling. He says, I don't know if you ever feel the same way. I know you need your hobbies as a person, but the guilt sometimes drives me insane. He says, can you relate? I wish you all the best for this year. Can't wait to see more content. Sam, thank you so much. So this is a super real feeling. In fact, if you guys follow the Vegan Cyclist, he talks about this a lot, about how cycling is selfish, and he's a total family guy. And it's just difficult sometimes when you want to go for a huge ride, but it means you're kind of bailing on your family. And I know for myself, I didn't notice this until I had kids, honestly, because my wife is super independent. And there was, in fact, just the schedule, the way it worked out, most weeks, I'd kind of do little rides throughout the week. But on Saturday, she would work and I wouldn't work. And I would just go ride like literally all day. And I remember just knowing, oh, I got to like 5 p.m. before she's even off work. We're going to meet up for church and dinner or whatever. But I got all day and she's working. So there's no reason for me to feel guilty. But as soon as we had a kid, now you being gone means someone else is on the hook. So even my independent wife, she can't just go do whatever she wants because she's watching our son. In fact, not only is she not doing anything she wants, she's probably doing something she kind of doesn't want to do, if we're going to be real about it. That's just having kids. So that's when I really started being more accountable for my time in general. Now, my grandma growing up always called me a dinker, which just meant that between, let's just say, planned things I was doing, I was just doing a lot of dinking. It took me a long time to get ready. It took me a long time to eat food. I was just kind of dragging my feet and dinking. And honestly, it's because I could. I really just had enough time to do that. You know, when I had kids, I didn't stop working as much. I didn't stop training as much. In fact, I've upped those things. But what I've stopped is all the stuff that really doesn't matter. And you know, it's not like I never do these things, but I used to take a nap every single day. And not only did I take a nap that was like 30 minutes, but I surrounded it with like YouTube. So it turned into this hour and a half event in the middle of the day that I could just do because I could. And as soon as I had kids, that was completely gone. You know, most of the time I watch YouTube now, it's on the bike trainer. And now since I had my other kids, I can feed them, kind of turn something on. But basically what I'm saying is the stuff that really doesn't matter needs to go. And you have to like audit your time and get rid of the dinking. And I say that because you want to make sure that you're not wasting your time on things that don't matter. So when you do go ride, you kind of earned it. Or at least your wife or husband or your family will see that you're doing like a lot for the family. You're there, you are engaged, you're working hard, and you're not just kind of farting around with your thumb up your you know what. And then you also want to go ride all day. If you are just getting after it, you're doing your best to meet the needs of the family, and then you choose to go and ride, I think that that should make you feel a little bit more confident in doing so. And it's not always easy. You know, I've really cut back on certain ride times in general, or if I am going to go on a long ride, I just try and do my best to schedule it out, to prep my wife, to be like, okay, you know, what can we do that I can make this happen? How could, you know, I make your day better? Does this mean that the rest of that day I just take the kids? And like, what is it going to be that allows me to go and feel good about it, knowing that you're set? And again, I'm not perfect with it, but I've gotten better about doing that in advance. So between cutting out the stuff that doesn't matter and really saving my personal time for the bike, I'm also trying to be a little bit more organized in planning it. And also, just the reality that you training and hitting your sessions is probably going to make you feel like your best self. And you want to bring your best self to your family. And I think, you know, for me, it's obvious, so outwardly obvious, about how much training matters to me. And I'm very fortunate now that it's a part of my job. Like I have to do it. That's not why I do it. I choose to do it. Honestly, some days, like even my trainer ride today, felt like it was for more mental clarity than anything. But my wife knows that. She knows it's super important for me. So when I come to her and say, hey, I really want to get this ride in, what can we do to make it happen so you know I'm not bailing on you? I think she takes it a little more seriously. And then she also looks at the rest of my life and be like, oh, wow, he got up at 4 a.m. today to get work done before the kids got up. He got up at this, like, I really do that stuff. I'm about this life, people. So that's the kind of steps I've taken, and it's helped. Again, it's not perfect. I think, you know, the whole cycling is a selfish sport thing. I think it's kind of real, but I also don't think that you should have that much guilt over it, just because there's a level of selfishness that's required for you to be at your best. And that is you bringing your best back to your family. And in a weird kind of full circle way, I think it's not as selfish as you might think. Maybe that's just what I tell myself to justify it, but I hope those two things I said help. This final question is from @BigPatton. He said, I'd be interested to hear you dive into nutrition periodization and using it in the flow of a typical cycling season. So my response to that DM was, great idea, like carb periodization. He said, great topic as well. I was thinking more in going through fat loss, maintenance, and gain cycles. This brand or company, Renaissance Periodization, does it a lot with their strength athletes, but I think it can apply to cyclists as well in a sport so driven by weight. So I looked into Renaissance Periodization, and it is actually an awesome brand in working with weightlifters. Generally, like, they follow food tracking and they do one-on-one coaching and all this for nutrition. But when you are a weightlifter, you're typically competing in weight classes, unlike cycling, that you really just compete all together. You know, you could have someone who is, let's just say, I was going to use a kilo example, but I'm just so not trained on that. So you could be 150 pounds, you could be 200 pounds, and you could be racing together. So weight isn't as much of an importance as watt per kilo and certain other skill sets that a cyclist might have. Everyone's kind of got their wheelhouse, and it's just not as focused as someone weightlifting who has to be in the 150 to 159 pound weight class. So with that being said, going through cutting, maintenance, and gain cycles could be important to hit those weight classes specifically. But also, when you're trying to gain muscle, you have to be in a surplus. And most likely in a surplus, you're going to gain some fat. Now, you can do what's called a lean bulk, which I'm sure these guys are coaching their athletes through. You know, it could be as small as a 300 calorie surplus a day, and that could be enough for you to build extra muscle without putting on too much fat, if any at all. And that's a really cool thing. It's hard to do, It's as hard, in my opinion, as probably just tracking and losing fat, because it's again, like I've said multiple times this episode in the last couple of weeks, with food, it is just such a slippery slope. 300 calories is not that much, especially when you're just 300 calories over maintenance. Because a lot of times when people are in a quote unquote bulking, and this is not the ideal way to bulk, but they're just smashing food, anything and everything, but they're also doing, and this is the most important difference, when they're bulking or in a gain cycle, they're doing exercises to support that will actually build muscle. When you have a lot of cyclists who, let's just say you're strength training twice a week and you're riding, you are not in a position to be building as much muscle as someone who's purely focused on building muscle. So you have, it's like when, you know, a cyclist takes steroids, their body doesn't blow up, and that's because of the stimulus through the workout. So it's the same thing with a guy like with lifting weights or bodybuilder. You know, you give a cyclist and a bodybuilder the same steroids and their results are going to look drastically different because of the exercise stimulus that they're doing. So in regards to the gain cycles, I'm not saying that it wouldn't be useful as a cyclist, but most likely you don't even need to go to a gain. You probably just need to go to a surplus. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I just totally contradicted myself. You don't need to go to a gain. You probably just need to go to maintenance. Excuse me. I'm so sorry that I made that confusing. You probably don't need to gain. You probably just need to go to maintenance, because again, you're not really trying to put on extra mass for the most part. Typically, cyclists aren't. There are some hard gainers that are trying to put on muscle. If that's the case, yes, go into a surplus. You should be using gain cycles to build muscle, and you should probably be strength training more than 2 days a week. In fact, if you're really trying to build muscle, you should definitely be strength training more than 3 days a week. So you can be, you're kind of like the exception to the rule in this concept. So that's why, like, the whole gain cycle is the only thing I'm hesitant on, because cyclists typically are in a maintenance zone that is kind of blurring the line between some days being in a deficit and, you know, some days being in a surplus, kind of right around maintenance, and then maybe a final shred to get down to like their real race weight. Because even when you are in a maintenance zone, typically people eat a little bit more. Like, they probably are in a very slight surplus, so you don't really need to encourage them to gain as it is. So I hope that actually, you know, kind of clarifies the difference between why, you know, bodybuilders would want to be in a building gain phase when, you know, cyclists maybe wouldn't. But everybody typically has a cutting or shred phase. Now, I think that for the most part, people should do this in a short-term block. And I say that because although the right thing for me to say as a health coach, quote unquote, would be that you want to just do it as slow as possible and healthy as possible and this and that. And okay, that would be great, but it's not that easy. It really isn't, especially if you have no idea what to do. I mean, I'll go back to my Chick-fil-A example earlier. I had a spicy chicken sandwich from Chick-fil-A. She told me it was 460 calories and it's a grilled sandwich. And I asked why. Or I asked what was on it. And she's like, oh, I think it's 460 because of the spices. Right away in my head, I'm like, spices don't have calories. Like, they don't. So, and then she said, oh, there's lettuce, tomato, and cheese. And I'm like, okay, take the cheese off. She's like, oh yeah, that dropped it to 300 and whatever calories. So her idea of what was causing the calories to go up was the spices on the sandwich. It's the slab of cheese on there. So when you're that far away from understanding food, you can't take a slow, I'm not saying you can't take a slow approach, but you're going to at some point have to, you know, really hunker down and focus on your food and put a real quality tracking effort in just to get educated. You know, if that girl tracked her food for a month and just focused on it hard for a month, she would learn way more than if she just, like, quote unquote, tried for the next year. At least in my opinion, I see way better results when people put a focused short amount of time into it, because it's tangible, it's enough for them to learn, and it's actually practical and it's clear. So anyways, I think if you are a cyclist and you go through that cutting shred kind of cycle, that's a really good idea. Get down to sort of your ideal weight and then focus on maintenance. Now, you can refer back to the maintenance strategies that I talked about in the beginning of the episode with the dialed health shred. But again, I just don't think you'll really need to go into that full-on gain phase unless you're a person who wants to put on muscle, and that's about it. Because of the training stimulus, you know, you're just going to gain fat. And the thing is, if you're in a super hard cycling training block, you're probably riding a ton and you need to eat a ton of carbs, and it's probably going to be hard to out eat those carbs. Don't get me wrong, I just talked about on the last episode, I can do it. You know, I can eat 6,000 calories in a day. I've done it. I just had to stop myself from overeating. Thank God I was tracking, even after a 70-mile ride. But most likely, you know, if you overeat because of the training stimulus, you're not going to be putting on muscle. You're going to be putting on fat. So keep that in mind. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Dialed Health Podcast. I hope it lived up to the hype that I gave it in the intro. And I'm also curious on your feedback with the podcast. How do you think it's going? You know, I want to get more guests on, but I'll tell you, the biggest thing that's held me back from having guests is the extra layer of work that it requires. You have to plan, you have to schedule, you have to be a little bit more organized than I honestly have the capacity for right now. I am starting to delegate more work, and I'm very excited about people coming into Dialed Health and getting involved to help us scale, because we're at a really pivotal point right now. You know, I worked all year last year to transition to online and just barely get to the point where I could be online. And now, honestly, and I'm so grateful to say this, I'm at the point where, you know, I'm struggling to get back on emails, to be totally transparent. I'm struggling to do all the content and things like I have, and I'm just hitting that new capacity. So we have to spread out the work, and it's just such a fun process. It really is. It's hard, it's challenging, it's risky, it's all those things, but to think that we're having these types of problems right now is like the coolest thing ever. So that is the delegation kind of tangent for you with Dialed Health. But I was wondering if you would like anything specific on the episodes. Do you want me to be more clear? Do you want more studies? Do you want more science? Do you want me to talk about my spicy Chick-fil-A sandwiches more? Let me know what you think, and I'm totally open to the feedback. So thank you for the support. If you are not yet a member at dialedhealth.com, please go sign up. Please support what I'm doing. That is the number one thing that you could do for me, and also for yourself. I mean, that's it sounds so selfish. Help me. No, the truth is, I love the workouts that are on there. I love the results it's having on cyclists, and I love the fact that the community is building and just becoming a bigger thing. You know, I want this to be the number one resource for strength training for cyclists all over the world, and I believe it's going to happen. And your support really allows those things to get one step closer, because every time someone becomes a new member, we have new gross income coming in. I can flip it back into marketing. I could add new help. It looks better for all sorts of scalability type things. So anyways, thank you so much, and I hope you guys have a great week. Also, shout out to everyone that's been leaving Google reviews, you guys. The Google reviews are so rad. The podcast reviews are so rad. If you're not going to become a member at dialedhealth.com, please go leave a 5-star review on one of those platforms. Just write something positive. That's also huge for the growth, along with sharing your you listening to the podcast to your Instagram story. Tag me and I'll repost it. And I think I said about everything. All right, guys, I hope you have an insane week. With that being said, start moving forward. I will see you next Wednesday.